Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
See, the United Nations now confirming that 2.5 million people have fled Ukraine since Russia invaded 2 weeks ago. Another 2 million have been internally displaced by the war, so moving towards the West. The UN Refugee Agency's chief, Filippo Grandi, blamed the mass displacement on what he called a senseless war. He said the number of refugees from Ukraine tragically has reached 2.5 million. And going back to what I was saying, coming from the Kremlin, that Vladimir Putin claims that there are 16,000 volunteers who are willing to fight against Ukrainian forces who will come from the Middle East. They're also saying, and you know, we have to, you know, couch this in a very particular language, that this is coming from the Kremlin and we have to take it as such. The Russian defense minister proposed handing over American-made anti-tank systems such as Javelin and Stinger to the fighters from the rebel regions of Luhansk and Donetsk. And Putin, who was speaking at this Russian Security Council meeting, said that he supported such an idea. He said that those who wanted to volunteer to fight with the Russian-backed forces should be allowed to. The defense minister, again, confirming this number, 16,000 volunteers, he says, who are in the Middle East, who are ready to come to fight with Russian-backed forces. But as I say, we have to bear in mind the propaganda of war. Now, listeners might have spotted the picture this morning of 10-year-old Vlada Berdysheva, who's pictured in the Irish Independent this morning under the headline, "From Kiev to Kerry, her new teacher, Patricia Bennett, at Nagel Rice Primary School in Milltown, appears with her in that photograph." And we know that around a third of the Ukrainians arriving into Ireland are children. And I think I'm joined on the line now by the Minister for Education, Norma Foley. Minister, you're very welcome.
Good morning, Claire.
Good morning. Thank you very much for being with us. Now, you have said that we'll cope one way or the other, but it won't be easy. And you can see there, it's a beautiful picture of Vlada, but Vlada turned up unannounced. The school in Milltown coped with that and they were happy to, but there will be challenges.
Absolutely. And I think that's an excellent example, though, of how already our schools are adapting and showing remarkable flexibility. I have visited schools myself and, you know, visited a class last week and a Ukrainian student had just arrived and was very happily engaged in the class activity and supported by other students. And I've spoken with principals and, again, they have told me, you know, a principal told me yesterday, you know, a family arrived on a Friday and on the Monday accommodations were made in the school. I think that is testament really to the generosity and the openness of our schools. And, you know, schools have the experience of doing that on an ongoing basis where children just arrive into their community and they are doing that very, very well at this point in time. But I know this it will be more demanding.
Yes, and a completely different scale as well. And I'm just wondering, when the state as a whole is looking at housing people, will they be working with you and your department to find the areas where there are available school places so that housing and schools can be linked?
Yes, indeed. And we are very fortunate that we have a database of capacity within the department. In other words, we're very clear as to where there is particular capacity in our schools in different places or locations around the country. And we have shared that database with the Department of Children. And the ideal scenario would be that families would be directed to areas where there are capacity. And I accept that in some instances that might not be possible, but in the main, that would be a very positive and good start from our point of view. But we're looking at a whole suite of resources, if you like, really. In particular, we know that language is probably the greatest barrier for students. So we have a very significant English as an Additional Language program operating in our schools. We would be, you know, augmenting that and adding to it. We have a department helpline for school principals and school leaders and additional staff being placed there specifically to address issues in terms of supports for Ukrainian students. The Teaching Council will be expediting registration process for Ukrainian teachers coming to Ireland. And that, again, will help with language supports for us. And our NEPS teams have provided details for our schools in terms of coping with war for the children who arrive, but also for our own children who are very conscious of all that's happening in the world as well. And I must mention also, for example, school transport, particularly in rural Ireland, that's an issue. So there's a dedicated bus there in email in English, Ukrainian and Russian. And there will be no fee for students that need to avail of school transport.
And you mentioned Ukrainian teachers there. And if they do sign up, Is integration a key plank of this? Or if you get a Ukrainian teacher with, you know, a substantial number of Ukrainian children in that area, will they be segregated into a classroom of just Ukrainians?
Well, I'm going to say to you from my own experience, and it is my hope and expectation in the vast majority of instances where we can do it, I would very much like to see all the children and young people seamlessly integrated into our system as it stands. And we see that done so beautifully and so expertly presently in, you know, classes around the country, and that's the absolute ideal. But I think we must also be aware of the fact that, you know, the numbers are unknown at this stage. We're working through the logistics, and what we will do everything that needs to be done to ensure that the children and young people are welcomed in, are part of the school community, but we will meet the different challenges as they come based on the numbers. But the ideal is that they would be seamlessly integrated. And I had the opportunity, Claire, to really to have a conversation with the Ukrainian Minister for Education this week, and I have got to say to you that the details that he shared were absolutely harrowing. Children, young people, families fleeing for their lives, more than 250 schools, education institutions bombed, more to come, as you said, and we've seen this in the last number of days. And really, they are appealing to the generosity and good nature of the rest of the world, really. And he has been so fulsome in his gratitude to Irish people for the manner in which we are embracing Irish Ukrainian families. And I think just in their time of need and in their time of absolute devastation, the thing that raises their hearts is the willingness of societies like Irish society to do what needs to be done.
And we saw during COVID that there was pressure when it came to finding substitutes. How will that be managed this time? Will you need more specialised teachers? Do you have enough substitutes to come in and help?
Well, yes, indeed. We are currently working through all the logistics of that. The NCSE, for example, charged with special education, they are working through the logistics of how best to deal with students who might have additional needs. Our CINOs, our special needs organisers on the grounds, we work directly with families. We have significant resource in place now in terms of how we coped with COVID, in terms of substitution teachers and the substitution panels that we put in place for our primary schools, and we will be looking to, you know, to continue to support them going forward as well.
Just a suggestion from a listener who says, with Ukrainian children attending school in the state, could we not utilise the experience and tools from the remote learning we'd used here during the pandemic? Perhaps, says this listener, the Department of Education could sponsor some Ukrainian teachers to remotely teach the refugee children. Is that a practical suggestion?
Well, can I say to you that all options are being looked at, and I appreciate that from your listener, and indeed that is another option that has been has been suggested, and the department is looking at. But I do want to say, in the first instance, I think children and young people are better placed when we can have them within the system, when we have them supported by other Irish
and
students
physically and, in the classroom,
yeah, and physically in the place.
Okay,
yeah.
And funding for this, because obviously you're going to need additional funding for these places and resources. Will the current DESH schools and the pupils who are in those schools, will they be competing with the needs of these children coming from Ukraine?
No, there is absolutely no question of that. And you would be aware that in recent days I made a very significant announcement around DESH and a 32 million euro investment, ensuring that an additional 310 schools will now be part of the DESH programme, which is at its primary aim to tackle disadvantage in education, to ensure that every child, irrespective of their own personal circumstances, will have an equal opportunity to access education and improve their education outcomes, but also to improve their life outcomes.
Yeah, and you'll know
your own
party colleague, Senator Catherine Arda, criticised that increased DESH funding, asking how did 15 schools in your own constituency in Kerry get funding but none for Dublin South Central?
Well, I want to be very clear. What we were doing here is extending the DESH programme. In certain constituencies, like the constituency in Dublin, a considerable number of schools were already in the DESH programme. There were other areas around the country where there were not as many schools who deserved to be in it, But I also want to say to you that the model that was employed, the HB index model, is independently verified by the ERC, the Education Research Centre. It's a model that's above reproach. It was an independent assessment. And I want to say that if you were to look throughout the country, that different areas, depending on how the disadvantage was measured, had different numbers of DESH schools being delivered.
So Dublin example, South Central, Donegal, clearly no school there met the criteria in this round of funding.
Because an extraordinary number of schools are already in the DESH process there. But for example, in Tipperary, there were an additional 28 schools that were added. In Carlow, there were 14, in Donegal, there were 30.
The inference from Catherine Arda is that the inference there is that there was political interference in this.
Well, I totally reject that. It's an independent model. It's a model that looked at the levels of deprivation in a given area. And if, as I say, if you were to look at the map, in terms of deprivation, 30 schools were added in Donegal. There were 27, 28 added in Tipperary, 22 in Limerick. So it depended on how the model identified deprivation in any given area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I absolutely, you know, Senator Arda articulates for her constituency. She's an excellent senator and she has to do that for her constituency. But I think she needs to see, everybody needs to see this in the context where there are existing DESH schools in an area. The purpose here was to add to areas where there wasn't such a liberal representation of DESH. And the opportunity was to ensure that the maximum number of students throughout the country would have opportunity to avail of DESH. Now, so we now have 1 in 4 of our students across the country availing of DESH support.
Now, we touched on the subject of COVID and obviously it is still there and officially there are few outbreaks in schools, but I think we all know of primary and secondary schools where there are large numbers of pupils and indeed teachers absent with COVID and have been over the last number of weeks. Are you concerned now at the growing rates? Do we need perhaps to look again at some of the measures that have been removed from schools?
Well, in the first instance, I do want to say, Claire, that, you know, many of the infection prevention and control measures remain in schools in terms of the finances being provided to schools for hand sanitizer, in terms of PPE. I visit many, many schools on an ongoing basis, and students and staff have the freedom to choose to wear masks or not wear a mask, and that's an entirely personal decision. But we are continuing to resource the measures that need to be made available in schools, even though we're journeying out of COVID now. And just in terms of that, I think we need to be very clear about, whilst there is a spike in numbers, we're looking at the hospitalisations, we're looking at the numbers that are in ICU, 41 in ICU, the lowest numbers that we've had. And we can actually say that we've been told by public health that even those that are in hospital, just over half of those are in hospital as a consequence of COVID. So whilst, you know, there might be an increase in the numbers of late in terms of a spike, we're not seeing that materialise into hospitalisation or ICU.
I'm not sure if you were at the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party meeting earlier this week, but there are many reports across the papers that John McGuinness, your colleague from Carlow Kilkenny, tried to give the Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly, a child soother. Did that happen?
Well, in the first instance, I can confirm that I was there, but I would have to say to you, the bells went at the end of the meeting. We were being called. I didn't see that.
Mm-hmm. And do you think it's an appropriate way, though, for adults to be behaving in the context of a crisis as well?
Look, I have to say to you, I didn't witness it. Stephen Donnelly is working extremely hard. I think he has delivered a vaccination process in this country that is heralded throughout the world. It is second to none. He has given 110% and continues to do so in terms of health. Whatever, you know, we're a broad church within the Fianna Fáil party. There can be different views and different opinions and there can be some element of, you know, exchange and all of that. That's the nature of it. That's the nature of politics.
So if you think Stephen Donnelly is working hard, what do you think John McGuinness is up to?
people, in fairness, John McGuinness is an excellent public representative. He's doing the work on the ground for his constituents. That's what we're all about, doing the business of work. And what happens at a parliamentary party meeting happens at a parliamentary party meeting. As I say, we're a very broad church within the party, but each of us dedicated to doing the job that we're asked to do, the job that we're invested to do. I'm doing that. My colleagues are doing that. Getting about the business.
All right, Minister for Education Norma Foley, thank you very much for your time this morning. Now, I mentioned at the start that we're going to be joined by the Chief Executive of the Irish Red Cross, and Liam O'Dwyer is going to take your questions around pledging accommodation for people who are fleeing the conflict in Ukraine. We've had so many questions in for Liam, but do keep them coming. 51551, he'll be joining us next.